This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back to Wells Tech. This is episode 397 for Tuesday, June 16th, 2015. My name, in case you've forgotten, is Martin Spriggs. And we run this show each and every Tuesday, for the most part, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Central Time. It's a little show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. Joining me in that conversation is Sally Draper. Sally, wonderful job on the solo work last week. You are natural.
I am so glad you're back, Martin. Thank you for rescuing me from the solo work, because that is not a fun job. I was happy to stand in and happy that you had a break, but I'm real happy to see you back.
See, that's what a pastor teaches. They have to do the solo work stand in front of a congregation or a classroom. And
I'm not either, so I don't have to do that, no, at least not very often.
This is not the first time you've gone solo either, so.
No, but we're always happy when Martin's back to guide the conversation.
I think we make a good team, and that's why we do this together each and every week. And for 397 times,
yeah,
for the most part, we've done it side by side. So coming up on 400, aren't we?
Lots of podcasting under the belt, and 400 is looking us in the eye. Happening July the 10th at a special event we're planning. That's the Wells Tech Conference, and looking forward to that.
I've got some giveaways over my left shoulder here for those attendees. Now, not every attendee will get one of these, but chances are still there. If you show up, we're giving away. I've got Chromebook Pixel, which is that nice 15-inch touchscreen that we're giving away. 3 Acer Chromebooks. You can see an Apple TV back there, a couple books, Windows tablets, some Office 365 giveaways, some ebooks we're giving away, just a lot of good stuff. In addition to all that, we're giving away, I would say giving it away, a lot of knowledge, a lot of tech in ministry knowledge that you can take home with you and use in your congregation or school. That's actually the best part. That's why we've got a lot of people coming, and we would love more to come. So get on over to wells.net/wellstechconf and sign on up. We've got pre-conference workshops that still have room. We have over 50 sessions, unique sessions that are being offered. So the getting's good, and we still have that registration open. Even though we said we'd kind of close it on the 15th, we fibbed a little bit and said we still want more people to come.
You know what? And we'd love more people in the hotel with us, too. It's a wonderful location we picked out for the conference. It's a water park hotel. So bring your family along, and y'all can all enjoy the water park on site as well. That's Country Springs Hotel and Conference Center in Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Right. So come on over, join us. We're looking forward to it. Only 3 short weeks away, basically. So
that's the scary part. Lots to do between now and then, but we'll get there.
You betcha. When we were debating about topics, there were a lot of options, and we try and keep it a little bit lighter, I think, over the summer, although it never really works out that way. Sometimes we dive in and say, hey, there's a lot here to share. But we try and pick some topics that are relevant to people who maybe have a little more time over the summer. Summer slows down a little bit. You have a time to think about some of the things that you couldn't get done during the busy school year or the busy church year. You feel like diving into a little bit deeper project. And one of those that all of you who manage technology within your organization need to kind of have on the front burner from time to time is documentation. It's not the most exciting thing in the world, although we're going to talk about some tools that make it exciting. that at least I find exciting, and Sally, I think you do too, that will enable you to produce good documentation so the person coming after you or your users who are using the tools that you're creating or installing or supporting can actually be good stewards of those tools and take advantage of all the features and know how to use them. And that's what good documentation does. So we're going to talk a little bit about that.
For sure. And Martin, you know, it may seem like a little bit of a dry topic, but I kind of reflected back to my past career in the insurance industry. And back in the late 80s, early 90s, we hired a big consultant firm to help us with quality. And what they said was to do it right the first time, to have a quality process, whatever it is, you need to write it down and follow your instructions each time. It's pretty simple for a big, huge consulting company to come in and tell us to do that. But that was what it all boiled down to, was documentation. And I think the same is very true in our churches and schools. And I think maybe even more so, because a lot of times we rely on volunteers to do these important jobs, whatever they may be. I'm thinking about our former congregation. We had a group of people who counted the money every Sunday, and you know, they needed to input that information into a computer system, and they needed to do it correctly. And having good documentation was a key step to getting good quality financial statements and things from our computer system. So that's just one little example, but I think it's an important job and important. It pays off in dividends that you have good work completed consistently.
Yep, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about maybe some of the categories or things that you may want to think about documenting. And some of these are pretty obvious and some are not, but there are lots of little and big things that have to be done right, and there's a certain progression of things that you want to, you know, make sure that the thing gets done correctly year after year, quarter after quarter, or time of year after time of year. Sally, when you are thinking about what needs to get done in your church or school, what comes to your mind first, and you know, what are the big things?
I think some of those routine jobs should be documented. Things like the ushers and what their responsibilities are, or the altar guild that sets up for communion or changes out the paraments and things. Just some of those regular routine jobs, writing them down and having them documented. On the school side, maybe it's your school fundraisers, or you know, just those cyclical things that come up each school year. Beginning of school registration process.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Lots and lots of information, requirements from the state, you know, all kinds of things that you have to have signed off on at registration time. Great to document all of that. And, you know, I'm sure every one of us has experienced not having that documentation in place, and the next school year rolls around and you go, oh, I hate to even begin thinking about it because it's such a huge mountain to climb. But if you have your documentation, you whip it out and you do the same thing you did last time.
Yeah. The problem is some of these things happen maybe only annually, maybe even, you know, more time in between the events than that. But the challenge today is they involve systems. They involve software usually that can be complicated. And if you don't do it on a regular basis, you can forget how to do it. And there's a lot of buttons to push. And I think of some of the church management and school management software solutions that we've recommended over the years, that there is some complicated procedures that really need to be step-by-stepped documented, so that maybe a volunteer who is going to, you know, out of the goodness of their heart say, yeah, I can help, I want to help. You want to make it as pleasant an experience as possible, but they still have to know the step-by-steps of the software that you're using. And it could be multiple systems working together. It could be PowerSchool. It could be Shepherd Staff. It could be, you know, whatever tools that you're using. It could be a spreadsheet, etc. All that requires documentation. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this, but good documentation, I believe, has pictures, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, picture's worth a thousand words, Martin, and just showing them, you know, what the screen looks like and circling the button they're supposed to push. That can make you a friend for life if somebody's trying to figure out a right. computer system, because it can be overwhelming to just look at a screen cold and try to find your way through and stuff. So definitely.
And the challenge, you know, is you have different kinds of learners. Some are visual, some are auditory, but there are, thank goodness, there are some documentation tools that will address both of those needs. So if they maybe perform better or learn better watching a video, there are tools to do that. If it's reading along with some visuals, you know, there are tools to do that. So lots of opportunity to give a person a chance at succeeding at, you know, whatever, however complicated it is.
Yep. And I'm not sure if we're quite ready to dive into it, but honestly, just my screen capture tools, even if video were out of the ballpark to start with or whatever, just being able to take a picture of what my computer screen looks like at a particular moment is super, super valuable.
Yep. So maybe we should talk about some of the tooling that is available. And one of our favorite companies from maybe even the beginning of WellsTech, I think, they've given us giveaways. And, you know, we've had a nice relationship with the good folks at TechSmith. And why don't, Sally, while I'm loading up one of their tools to do a quick demo, talk about the tools that they have available.
Sure. I'll even share my screen, Martin. We wanted to feature three in particular today from TechSmith. The first is a free tool called Jing. And Jing is basically a screen capture tool. And I believe it allows you to capture video as well. It's pretty vanilla in that once you capture it, you can't do a whole lot more than just save your capture and share it that way. I think you can add an arrow or something like that if you wanted to. But sits in the browser background and not really browser background. It's not even browser centric, but just in your computer background. So you can take a picture of anything on your screen. Totally free product and a great way to get started. Their next step up is called Snagit. And I would say of all their products, this one is near and dear to my heart. It's I think the price range for nonprofits is $50 or less. So an affordable little software tool that opens up a whole world of possibilities with screen captures and video captures. Really simple, all kinds of annotations and image editing tools built in. Really nice tool. And then finally, their video-centric tool with all kinds of video editing capabilities is called Camtasia. And so those are the three products we really wanted to highlight today.
Okay. Let me show everybody, for those of you that are watching, and I'll narrate as we go through this, how Snagit actually works. And they made some nice improvements to Snagit over the years. I'm just going to share my entire screen. And let me pull up a web page here to play with. And Snagit installs differently on different devices. But so, for instance, in this case, Snagit on a Mac appears as a little slide-out window on the right side of the screen. And Sally mentioned that you can do both a capture, a snapshot, or video capture, which is one of the things they've added in the last few years. But all you really have to do is pick which one you want to capture, hit the red button, and the screen transforms. It kind of dims, and you get this little crosshair. And let's say you're demonstrating a procedure or some kind of link on a software application, whether that's Shepherd Staff or PowerSchool or whatever. You would simply click and drag over the area that you want to focus on. So let's say I'm going to grab, you know, this area of the screen. You just click and drag. You let go. Snagit, the Snagit software pops up with all these annotation tools. So yeah, lots of ways to grab screenshots, but I think the power of Snagit is all these cool annotation tools. And you can do bubble callouts, you can add stars or highlighting, and you can add arrows to point out something. So if you're saying, hey, click on this link, just click on the arrow, let's say, and then you can drag the pointer over to point at exactly what you want to call attention to. You can skinny this up. You can add notations around it. And then you just simply click save, and it saves itself as a as any file format you want, a PNG. I think it saves as a JPEG, those kinds of things. And then you insert that into your document, and away you go. There's all kinds of effects. You can do, you know, torn edges, and you know, do all kinds of fancy stuff with it if you want to impress your audience. But really, the power is just grabbing it, you know, real quickly, adding an arrow or a call out or whatever, and away you go.
Martin, one of my favorite you switched off of it too quickly.
Sorry.
One of my favorite tools has got a I think it looks kind of like a teardrop. It's on the second row, the second one. I believe that's blurring, which is really, it may not be in the Mac version. I'm not as familiar, but it's a really wonderful tool to have if you need to get rid of some sensitive data in your screenshots. So yeah, you can drag over an area and just blur the text out so that it's not readable.
If you have a password or username or something that you're using, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I also like the stamps, which there's a little stamp icon on the first row. And that allows you to add numbering and things, which is really nice. They give you all kinds of cool little icon-y type things that you can add to your, you know, to annotate in different ways. So it's not just arrows and things. You can size them. You can color them. All kinds of options there. So if you're writing documentation and you really want people to be able to follow it well, they definitely put the tools at your disposal for doing that.
Well worth, you know, the price of admission. Again, there are lots of other tools that you can do screen captures with. They come standard with operating systems now. There's something called
Snipping tool with Windows.
On Windows, and then there's a key combination, Grab, I think they call it, on the Mac. So you have different options there, but you have a little bit of annotation tools, but nothing like you're going to get with Snag, which is really important when you're doing documentation. You don't just want to show them a picture. You want to draw their attention to a particular region, and those tools that you mentioned are the ones that can do the trick for you.
Yep. So now it's my turn to share. I'm going to show you a behind-the-scenes look at Camtasia Studio, which is the video production software, and it's multi-versed as well. You can do all kinds of things. So what I have here on the screen is kind of a media area in the upper left, and then in the upper right is a preview of my video. So I can actually push play, and you notice along the bottom it starts playing and it shows me what's going to happen in my video and how it's going to shift and things like that. I just have still images brought in here, so you can bring in still images. You can bring in PowerPoint slides very easily, but you can also, of course, bring in video and audio to go along, and then when you're done, mash it all up into a single video. They give you a really vast library of tools along with the software. So some background music selections come along for free, and they typically give you, you know, different links for each of the different music software music selections that are here. And I can see on the timeline along the bottom the length of my video that I'm producing. It's a little bit over, it's probably about 1 minute and 5 seconds. So maybe if I chose the one that's 1 minute and 2 seconds, that would be a good one to choose. And I can just drag it down here and drop it, and it'll add as a second track to my timeline here. I can insert things easily. I can do all kinds, you know, zoom and pan. So if I want to go into a picture or a video and zoom in on a certain section of it, I can do that. I can do the call outs, you know, point out things about the video or imagery that I'm including. Very versatile tool. And I think pretty comparable to similar products like from Adobe and others who have, you know, video editing software, and very intuitive.
Yep. I think that, they make it easier than a tool like Adobe Premiere or whatever. It's really made for just an average Joe user who doesn't need to know all the fancy stuff that goes along with, you know, professional video editing, but just needs to put together, you know, a screen sharing session or flip classroom kinds of settings work well, or this is a tool that would work well in a flipped classroom kind of setting where you just want to record a video of yourself or demonstration of something on screen or a PowerPoint that you want to annotate and do some transitions, keep it interesting, lots of options. And the whole timeline concept is pretty easy to grasp once you, once you play around a little bit with it. So.
Right. It definitely allows you to record your screen. You can also do picture in picture. So if you wanted to record your screen with a little small image of yourself in a, from a webcam or whatever overlaid, it'll allow you to do that kind of thing. Just kind of the sky's the limit. But I don't want you to think that you have to do all those things, because you can just come in here, click the button, record your screen, talk on your microphone, and it'll show you here what your video is going to look like. Oftentimes when I do that kind of thing, I maybe have a little flub in the middle and I can actually zoom in and, you know, cut out this little part of the audio where I said, too many times or whatever it might be. So you have some editing tools like that, but very often I just bring it in here and click the produce button and I have my video created and I don't have to, you know, get into a lot of the other things if I don't need them.
So that brings up a question about documentation, both video and other digital kinds of documentation, whether they're static or dynamic like a video. Where do you store it? Where do you put this stuff? And there are some very cool tools built into the TechSmith products that make that really one-click kinds of things. There's different repositories that they connect to. One of them is their own, screencast.com, which I think for under 2 gigabytes of content is still free, although even the annual price is not that expensive. But you also have things like Google Docs that I think you can automatically stuff into, as well as YouTube if it's video content. I don't know if they've got more than that, Sally.
Yeah, I'd have to open it up and take a look, but definitely those channels are available.
Evernote and those kinds of things too for the Snagit stuff.
So, and you can privatize those things as well. So even if you are, you know, immediately uploading it to YouTube, you can set it to private access and stuff. So, you know, your documentation doesn't have to be out there for the whole world to have access to, even if you do choose some of those channels.
Right. So I guess the point here is, you know, documentation is important. It doesn't have to be that dull, you know, just I dread the activity of documenting this. One of the things that I kind of gravitate toward is the whole screencast thing, because it's easier for me to demonstrate and talk through it than having to go the step-by-step route, although that can be important depending on how your students like to learn or how your users like to learn. So lots of different options. And again, TechSmith isn't the only game in town, but we have a really high regard for their products. And this is really their business. This is where they make their money. So they put a lot of effort into these tools and their cross-platform. I think they're fairly reasonable. And again, they do have some nonprofit and educational pricing.
Yeah, definitely check that out if you're taking a look. They also have free downloads for a 30-day trial of all these products. So if you've never tried them, that's a really great way to dip your toe in the water and see if they're going to work for you. So just head over to the links that we provide in the show notes. I'll have a link to where you can download it for free. I'll also have links to their tutorial resources. You can imagine a company that produces products for screencasting and screen capture for documentation purposes has some really great documentation of their products. So you can't go wrong by just investing a little time in their tutorials and things that they have available as well.
Very good. All right. Good stuff. Let's move along to our next segment, which is news in tech. And there was some news coming out of the security world recently. And one of my favorite password managers, LastPass, was hacked. So we'll put a link to a Wired article that talks about a little bit more information. But LastPass is a password manager that works in your browser. There's also mobile versions of it. So on your iPhone or Android phone, you can store your prime targets for hackers, because if you can hack into somebody's LastPass account, you would have access to all their other passwords. So on Monday, this password manager service, LastPass, admitted that they had been the target of a hack, and that user email addresses, encrypted master passwords and reminder words and phrases of the service that asked users to create for those master passwords was potentially compromised. They go on to list who was affected, and it's really not quite as bad as it sounds, because it's probably unlikely that somebody could get at your passwords just because of the way they store it. But if you had a particularly weak password or used as your LastPass master password, that password in other sites, then you might have a problem as well. So that's just something to be aware of. I think all these password manager sites have been hacked over the years. LastPass, this is not the first time that they've been hacked either. So just take appropriate recommendations. You may want to change, if you use LastPass, you may want to change your master password there. Just use good password hygiene. But again, not the end of the world. Just wanted to make everybody aware that LastPass, one of the most popular password managers, had a suspected breach.
Not a good day for them. I imagine that's a really stressful job to
have. That's their worst nightmare, right?
Yeah. Oh, well. We're going to move on then to Wells Now. What's happening now in Wells is the fact that our Wells Live cameras are going to be bringing you broadcast from the Lutheran Women's Missionary Society annual convention, which is being held in Rapid City, South Dakota next week, June 25th through 28th. I have been to several of these conventions, and they are amazing, awesome events. And I'm so excited to hear that we're going to be streaming live from there. So three different opportunities to tune in. There's an event June 25th at 8 p.m. I'm guessing that's the opening service. That's 8 p.m. Central. They're probably mountain time out there, but that's 8 p.m. Central. And then June 26th at 9:15, Martin, you aware of what that one is?
I think that's a keynote. Yep.
And then another one, June 26th.
That's another keynote. Yep.
Great. So tune in, folks, and enjoy the live coverage of the LWMS convention. And oh my goodness, right next to it, there's some Wells Tech Conference events coming up in July.
Our own streaming, yep, exactly. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in the coming weeks. But yes, Lutheran Women's Mission Society is always a wonderful event. I've never talked to anybody who's come away from one of those not being just totally inspired and psyched for ministry.
Absolutely.
All right. The next segment in our little show here is our tips and picks of the week. Sally, what do you got?
Well, I quit screen sharing too quickly, but I'm back on the right screen, and I have a blog for you guys in the Google Apps space. This is called the Guru, G-O-O-R-U, and our personal Wells Tech guru, Jason Schmidt, shared this blog with me, and I couldn't stop digging deeper and deeper and finding all kinds of good things here. So the idea here is that this guy puts out a daily newsletter where you can get tips and tricks for your Google Apps installation. Everything's covered. Anything Google, there's all kinds of information here. And you can subscribe to that daily newsletter, and he'll send you the Ultimate Guide to Google Apps, which is a PDF document I believe you can access if you subscribe to their newsletter. Or you can just, you know, do like me and dig around the website. I think that the article that Jason specifically pointed to over on the Wells Google Schools Google Plus community was this one, 5 Hidden Features in Google Apps That Everybody Should Be Using, like how to mute annoying group threads. And there's a video to go along with each. I wonder if they use Camtasia for their videos. Great real-time analytics on form results. So being able to find out right away what kind of results you're getting on surveys and things. Finding a perfect time to meet using the Google Calendar app. keeping your cell formats consistent in Google Sheets, and adding structure to your doc with a table of contents. That's something I just recently had some experience with, and I really like their table of contents feature. So that's a helpful article. Other things I found, here's one called Admin Task Tips, Tricks, Training Videos, and Articles for Google Apps Admin Folks. All kinds of good stuff posted here. Another one is titled Adopting Google Apps, and it kind of walks you through bringing your organization on board with Google Apps, and they have all kinds of training and tips posted there. So those are just a few highlights from the guru, and the URL is thegooru.com, the guru. So check it out.
Nice.
Thanks, Jason.
Yeah. It looks nice, nicely organized as well, which I always appreciate in a blog, easy way to find and discover stuff. Mm-hmm. All right, my pick of the week kind of is related to the news in tech that I shared earlier about the hack into LastPass, which I'm a big fan of LastPass and a user of. One way to doubly secure yourself, and this is probably a thing that everybody that's involved with managing systems or is involved with maintaining centralized passwords for systems. So if you're the main account holder for important systems for your organization or servers, those kinds of things, you probably want to consider using two-factor or multi-factor or two-step authentication. And I think I've actually used this tip in the past. I'd have to look that up, but Google Authenticator is the tool that I'm going to recommend, and it's available on all the mobile platforms. Basically, you install it on a mobile device, and the way it works is you set this up with the thing that you want to doubly secure. So, for instance, in LastPass, they've introduced this a number of years back where you could use two-factor authentication so that when you log into your LastPass account with that super secret, very important password, you want it to not just let you right in if you know the password, because that password, you know, maybe is compromised, but you want to have another way to verify that it's really you. And this application that runs on your phone or even tablet will do that. So it will give you a second code that you'll need to enter in order for you to get into your LastPass account. So Google Authenticator, again, is available on Apple, Android. It's available on Windows as well. And let me just turn screen sharing off here, and I can show you on my phone how it looks. So if I am logging into LastPass, for instance, I log in with my known password, which should be strong in and of itself, but if that somehow gets compromised, the whoever's using it would not have likely my phone with them, and this application, which is tied to the application that you're working on. The way it works is you actually take a picture of a barcode that's on the screen one time, and then the app is all set up. So on my screen, there's a little application at the bottom called Google Authenticator, and there are like five or six of these kinds of authenticators that LastPass in particular will work with. But you can do this for your Gmail account or your Google account too. So if I open up my authenticator, it'll show me, and I can show you these codes even if you have my LastPass password, because they expire. You can see a little countdown icon, those of you that are watching, on the right-hand side saying after that counts down, and I believe it's 30 seconds, that number is going to change. So you have to use the password that's on your screen within those. See, it flashes red and then the numbers change. So I have two here for LastPass because I have two LastPass accounts. I have a personal one and then I have one for our Wells work. So I have to use the appropriate number when it's prompting me. And it has to come from my phone. It can't come from any other device but this phone. So that in and of itself doubly ensures that if somebody's going to really crack my account, they've got to both know my password and also have access to my phone. And in this case, it's an iPhone that has a fingerprint ID, so they have to also have my fingerprints. So I feel pretty good about my LastPass password being safe, and I should, because that has accounts to many other systems that that we manage here at the Senate, or personally to my Gmail account, which would have other private information. So it's free. Google Authenticator is free, easy to use. It just makes it, it just requires that you have your device with you when you want to log into some of these special, super sensitive, secure areas like LastPass, like your Google account, Microsoft account. There are other things that provide that work with Google Authenticator. So,
Martin, is your phone always with you?
It is.
Yep.
If it's not, then I've misplaced it.
Yeah. Mine's always with me. And last night, for the first time, it got knocked out of my hand and hit the floor.
Oh, no.
And I gasped because, yeah, my phone is always with me. I have a nice case and it didn't damage it at all.
Protected it.
Yeah.
Another tip. Yeah.
Very fortunate. But, yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that phone being with you because I'm kind of lost without it. So,
yeah. Now, it does require internet access. So if you're you're in a place where you don't have Wi-Fi or LTE, then this would not work very well because it has to interact with each other. But
so you're likely not going to be able to get into LastPass either if you don't have the internet.
Yeah.
So not that it's just for LastPass, but yeah.
Google Authenticator. Let's move on to community feedback.
All righty. If I was on my A game, I'd already have my screen shared, but y'all will wait patiently for me because I do have some websites and things to share with you today from our lovely community. The first one was just a, maybe I saw this on Twitter or something, but an announcement from Zmaps. And I believe somewhere in our history, Martin, we've talked about Zmaps and the concept that you can upload a spreadsheet of addresses and it'll draw a map for you. And so in ministry settings, this might be useful to map your congregation's addresses and things and have those accessible to you. Just recently, Zmap announced that now they'll allow you to do driving directions within their mobile map. So you bring up the map with, for instance, all your congregation addresses, and then you can say, get me there, you know, select one of the points on your map, and it'll give you driving directions from right in the mobile app. So I thought that was worth mentioning just because of the, you know, ministry context of mapping your congregation and doing visits and things like that. So that's new from Zmaps.
Yeah, I believe the one we had talked about, and maybe we did talk about this one too, but Batch Geo.
I remember that one as well.
Does a similar kind of thing, but this seems to add a different flair to it with the driving directions and could be
pretty useful. Yep, nice thing. All right, you mentioned prizes and things. They're sitting there on the desk behind you, making me real interested. We heard from our friend Steve Brown, who's a blogger over at Worship Ideas You Can Use, and a member of our Wells congregation, I believe a congregation in Connecticut, if I remember correctly. And Steve has recently published a book. It's available out on Amazon.com. It's called Lifestyle Worship. Martin's holding a copy of it there.
Yep. There it is in the flesh. This is a physical book, and he was understandably excited to be published, which is very cool.
Yeah, and we mentioned it a few weeks ago on the podcast. Steve contacted us and offered to donate a couple of books for us to give away to our Wells Tech listeners. So that's going to be something that's part of our giveaway package as well. And we just really appreciate that, Steve, and I'm sure it's a blessing to many. And you know, your experience and leading worship with different musical settings and things like that, I'm certain is valuable to many. So thanks for doing that.
And if you attend the Wells Tech Conference and you are the lucky winner of one of the two books that he's made available, you'll get a signed copy.
Awesome. So. Pretty sweet.
Yep.
We have the best listeners, huh?
We do. Awesome. Thank you, Steve.
And then finally, we heard from Pastor Paul Stratman. And, you know, I failed to copy his email in here, Martin, but I do remember it fairly well, saying that he had just come across this website. It's called Catholic Tech talk. Imagine that. Catholics are talking about technology as well. And just recently shared in a blog post there on the website was a social media image size guide. So it'll tell you the pixel dimensions for different things, different image locations.
Like if you want the banner at the top of your Facebook page,
right,
kind of fit nicely, that kind of stuff.
It's got Facebook, it's got Twitter, Google Plus, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and Instagram. So you won't go wrong with sizing your images correctly for social media with their social media image size guide. And honestly, Steve said, I'm sorry, it wasn't Steve, it was Pastor Stratman who said, you know, this site might be worth digging a little deeper. I bet there's some other things they've shared that will be a benefit to us as well. So hopefully we'll discover some more and be able to share them with our Wells Tech audience.
Very nice.
That's what I've got for community feedback for this week, Martin.
Okay. And we do have a ministry resource that we kind of picked for consumption here. What do we have?
And this is a blog post. The blogger is Joe Gallant. He's apparently out of the UK. And he titled this blog post, A Short Discussion on Church Stock, I'm sorry, on Stock Photography. And he's talking specifically from the church perspective. And he has a few points to make there. I think it's a good read, maybe not quite as short as I expected it to be with the title, but a good read nonetheless, where he talks about
the fact.
Well, he
does have short in quotes.
So. Yeah. he talked about the concepts of using short stock photography. He gives you some links to copyright and fair use knowledge articles and things from Church Marketing Sucks. And, so you definitely want to consider stock photography and copyright considerations and things. But one of his points was to not use it just for the sake of throwing a picture out there, to use good photography that fits what you're talking about, not just checking it off the list that I need an image to attach to this blog post or whatever it may be. He gives some points on what's good about stock photography, like color and storytelling and quality, things like that. But then the not so good includes the price, which if you're paying for some of these images can get rather expensive. And the relevance, I think, was one of the big points that he brought out in his article. He goes on to say, you know, that sometimes stock photography just looks blatantly stock mm-hmm. and that people are often like way too happy in it or whatever. He even says maybe you want to avoid having people and cliche type things in your photography and just look for originality and relevance to what you're writing. And then he kind of concludes and wraps up with different links to go to stock photography sites and some pointers thing and things here, like use your own camera and go out and take lots of pictures. You might surprise yourself and have a good collection of photography to choose from of your own. And he encourages you to kind of get ahead of the game. Like, don't wait till you're under pressure for just the right photo, but take photos along the way and build up your own library. And I thought all of those were really good points. You might want to check out the article yourself.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that question a lot too. So
definitely.
All right. Very good. Featured video of the week, Sally.
We will be embedding.
I bet I can guess it. Must have something to do with TechSmith.
With our friends at TechSmith. That's right. Super fan girl here. I was able to find a Snagit 12 overview where they demonstrate many of the things that Martin showed you earlier in the podcast, but a lot more about Snagit. They show you a little bit about the video side of Snagit and just a lot of other features that are part of the newest version of Snagit. So visit wellstech.wells.net. And in our show notes area, we always embed the video right there. So watch for the new show coming out tomorrow, and that video will be available to you.
And while you're on that site, wellstech.wells.net,
good place to be.
Why not leave a comment, question, suggestion? Just click the comment link there and leave your thoughts. Email us, wellstech@wells.net will also work. Maybe record a video or use one of our many social networks, Facebook, Twitter. Do we have Instagram available now, Sally?
Look over there. There's a brand new social media icon there on the Wells Tech podcast. It'll take you over to our brand new Instagram account. It's Wells Tech Podcast. If you search for us on Instagram, you should be able to find us and follow us. We only have one follower so far, and maybe that's me. I'm not quite sure. I won't admit that. But we'd love to have you follow us on Instagram. We're going to really sharing more there, especially during Wells Tech Conference, a great way to follow the conference and to share with us as well through our Instagram account.
Yep. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I love Instagram. I think it's got a lot of potential for ministry. So next week, Sally, Turnabout is Fair Play. I'm going to be doing the solo thing because Sally's on vacation. We give her a few days off once in a while. She's pretty valuable, so we try and dole that out very judiciously. But we're going to let her go next week. So that means I'm all by my lonesome. And that does not mean that the show won't go on. We're going to talk about social media and a tool that I really love that I think you will love too, especially if you're involved with posting to your Facebook, Twitter accounts for your church or school or even personally, a tool called Hootsuite. Been using it for a long time, and I think there is excellent value there for somebody who is posting multiple places and maybe some similar content and wants maybe to schedule it so you don't have to think, well, I got to get up at such and such a time to make sure that I get this at the optimal time for somebody to see it. So just me and you and Hootsuite next week.
I'll be watching somewhere.
All right. Very good. That's going to about do it for this week. Thank you for joining us. And we would really appreciate it if you tell your friends and feel free to tune in live. WellsTechLive.wells.net every Tuesday, 4 o'clock. See you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.